The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1033. It's the 4th of April, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Graham Lumsden, CEO of Motif Bio, that's MTFB ticker, and Graham discusses the initiation of a new drug application rolling submission for their lead drug Iclaprim to the US FDA, and also provides a general business update. I also have on John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, covering the following stocks: TriStar Resources, that's TSTR, Georgian Mining Corporation, GEO, and Bushveld Minerals, BMN. Plus, as always, have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Graham Lumsden, Chief Executive Officer of Motif Bio, that's MTFB ticker. Graham, thanks for joining me.
You're very welcome, Justin. Good morning.
Now, you've had a bit of news out of late, and we'll get to the detail of that in a bit. It's about the initiation of NDA rolling submission for Iclaprim and other things as well. Before we do, Graham, if someone's just tuning in and have never heard of Motif Bio, please explain to them what it's all about, please.
Certainly. So Motif Bio is dual listed on AIM in London and NASDAQ in New York. We're a clinical stage biopharmaceutical company specializing in developing novel antibiotics. And our lead compound is a novel antibiotic called Iclaprim, which is what the news announcement was this morning.
Excellent stuff. And so you've got a business update, and you've also got the initiation of an NDA rolling submission for Iclaprim. So what does this mean? But what's the significance of this, Graham?
Yeah, so Iclaprim has been designated two things by the FDA. First of all, a qualified infectious disease product, and secondly, a fast-track designation. And under the fast-track designation, you are eligible to submit what's called a rolling NDA submission. So all that means is we can submit sections of the new drug application as they are completed before waiting for everything to be ready. So we don't have to submit everything at once. We can do it on a rolling basis. And the advantages are it keeps the team on our end focused. So once we've got some sections done, we submit them. And it helps the FDA start to look at some of the sections that have already been submitted before having to wait for everything. So I think it's a win-win on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm reading about this a waiver. Explain this small business waiver you've achieved.
Yeah, so that's important for a company like Motif Bio. There's something called a PDUFA fee. This is the PDUFA stands for the Prescription Drug Users Fee Act. And this was a new law that was put into place a number of years ago to try and resolve the extended timeline that it was taking for the FDA to review new drug applications. So industry in the U.S. came to an agreement where they would basically pay money to support additional people, employees at the FDA, to speed up the review and decisions on new drug applications. So that application fee, every company that submits a new drug application has to also pay $2.4 million as an application fee. What we announced this morning was that Motif Bio has qualified as what's called a small business, and there's something called a small business waiver, which we were granted. So we do not have to pay that application fee for our first NDA submission. So that was great news as well.
Yeah, well, it is great news because a $2.4 million application fee, that's probably one of the biggest application fees I've ever heard of. So that's excellent news. And you talk about your strategy there, about commercialization. Take us through some of that in the release, if you could.
Yeah, so with a focus, first of all, on the U.S., for the United States, our base case has always been we just build a commercialization team ourselves. We hire representatives, medical science liaisons, account directors, But the alternatives that we've been looking at is, could we do that through a contract selling organization? So we've been having some very good discussions with some of the larger contract selling organizations in the U.S. And then the other two options that we've been evaluating, which I have to say are probably becoming our preferred options, are finding another company that's about the same stage as us. So an NDA currently in review with the first new product coming to market around about the same time as us at the beginning of 2019. Or alternatively, a hospital-focused specialty company that already has products on the market in the hospital, so they have a commercialization structure both in the office and in the field, and that could be a very good strategic fit for us. So we're having numerous discussions with companies that would fit those latter two categories. And then we still have ongoing discussions for territories outside the United States as well, looking for commercialization partners.
Yeah, and you must be keeping busy at the moment, because on top of all this, you have your final results due out very soon.
Yes, that's correct, Justin. So as a dual-listed company, we have two lots of year-end financials. Of course, they're completely synchronous. But in the United States, it's called a Form 20-F. That's the SEC report for our year-end financials. And of course, more familiar to probably people listening in, the UK annual report and accounts. And we will have them out and public next week.
Excellent stuff. Well, Graham, looks like you make it. And I've got to say, you know, the market's tough today, but you have risen on that news. That's very good. And most stocks are down today, so that's very good. But before I leave you and carry on with the stuff you have to do, for people listening who like the sound of this but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons, if you could, Graham, as to why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list.
Yes, certainly. So most people are aware that there's a problem with antibiotics not working in many patients, and you hear about patients in hospitals with MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staph aureus, who are basically running out of options. Antibiotics are just not working anymore for many of these superbugs that affect patients in the hospital. So this is an opportunity to participate in that space. Secondly, at Motif Bio, we have an interesting non-differentiated antibiotic called Iclaprim. It's very different to all the other antibiotics currently on the market and those in development. And thirdly, as we've just announced today, the NDA, the new drug application, has been started. And so, all going well, we should have a decision from the FDA, obviously, hopefully an approval, first quarter of 2019.
Excellent stuff, Graham. Good to chat to you. And like I say, lots of things going on, so hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, good. Thank you.
Excellent stuff. Now, you've been mentioning a couple of things pre-chat here. We've often discussed what stocks have had some news out. And you were saying you were chatting in the office about TriStar Resources, which I know very little about. TSTR is a ticker there. So take us through TriStar. What's happening there, John?
Well, we think that TriStar has potential to re-rate very significantly going forwards, and they are just going through the commissioning process for an antimony roaster in Oman. So this has cost quite a lot of money to put together. It's a consortium partnership with the Omani Sovereign Wealth Fund and a local construction engineering business. TriStar owned 40% of the project, which they earned into, in effect, by creating the project in the first place. If one starts to look at the figures, they're going to produce 20,000 tons of antimony a year. Antimony is a fire retardant. There's a good market for it in the world. It's been dominated by the Chinese for years, but the Chinese have been closing down some of their more polluting antimony roasting plants. So if we take some very simple statistics, 20,000 tons of antimony a year would be worth around $170 million. At the current price of $8,600 a ton. 60,000 ounces of gold also to be produced, because the gold they've bolted on a gold plant onto the edge of the side of this. That would produce $80 million a year. So if we add that up, $250 million of cash flow And TriStar's
market cap is around 22 million, isn't it? Yeah.
Market cap 22 million. Margins should be something over 25%, mm-hmm. maybe more like 35%. But if we took the 25% margin, about $62.5 million worth of operating profit there. Yeah, TriStar's 40% share of that would be worth about $25 million. And the TriStar's market cap is about $28 million. So in the first year of production after commissioning, they should repay their entire market cap, which is which should be really something to look forward to.
Yeah, that is significant, absolutely. And the ticker there is TSTR, so worth reading that RNS. Now, when was that? Was that at 22nd of March, wasn't it? Yes, that last
yes.
RNS. So worth looking at that. Marvellous. And moving on there, John, there's been a change of board. I know we've covered that a couple of times, but Georgian Mining Corporation, there's been a board reshuffle there. So Greg is gone, hasn't he?
Well, Greg has stepped down and is the finance director, according to the website.
Oh, okay.
And Mike Struthers has stepped up to be the CEO. And you've got Neil O'Brien in as non-executive chairman. So the board is strengthened in effect. I think these are the right people to take the project forwards. It's all about operational control and putting the project into production. Certainly production of the gold oxide or gold from the gold oxide on the surface of the project. I think in reality, over the next few years, they're going to spend a lot of time evaluating the scale of the copper project. I think this is something that is going to grow and grow and grow. The joint venture partner is very keen to get the copper ore and the gold ore and get that into its plant because the newly mine that they own has essentially run out of quality feedstock. I think for Georgian, the priority is going to be to define and prove up the value of this resource because it's got chalcocite and chalcopyrite in it, which are high-grade mineralization or copper mineralizations. I think this is something that is going to become much larger than anyone has really dared to talk about, and that's what's really interesting about this. So I don't think, whilst there will be a certain amount of production in the relatively near term, or this year, on the gold side, I'm not sure exactly when the copper project is going to get planned.
Yeah, well, was that some of the issue there? Because I know a lot of people approached me as saying that, and I did the same, when I was looking at Georgian Mining, because there wasn't a resource size there or anything, I was having issues putting numbers or figures around it, you know? And is that common for companies, you know, exploration companies, not to try and identify a joke resource or something, or, you know, I mean, because then at least you've got something to work off, haven't you?
No, the joke resources will certainly come. There's not necessarily a lot of point in doing a JORC resource on the gold oxide because that will get stripped off and processed relatively quickly. So I don't see the point in going through all that work. But they are drilling it further, mm-hmm. just to work out the sequence of which bits should go into the process plant first. But with the copper underneath, I think that certainly will require. In order to maximize the value of that, one should do quite a lot more work and definitely produce JORC resources on that in order to demonstrate the value and the best way of mining this from a value optimization perspective.
Yeah, obviously this in more detail. The copper I was thinking of. So, I mean, is there any indication? I mean, because people say there's quite a big, you know, resource there, but is there any indication of the size of this or not?
Yeah, well, they've got 3 to 5 million tons of copper indicated already. It's not a JORC resource yet, but their target is for 30 to 50 million tons of copper ore. Now, I think you know that's an ambitious target, but it looks as you know, there is reason to support the ambition that they have. And this would be something that would be worth many hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, in terms of net present value to the company. And is definitely worth spending the money and taking the time over. And, you know, we'll be trying to put together some scenarios around that to see what the potential production rates would be. The copper, certainly what's interesting is the grade. The grade looks mm-hmm. like it might be 0.7, 0.8% copper, which when you consider the topography and the fact that a lot of this, or a certain amount of it, sticks up above the ground, means that it would be very economic from a mining perspective. So there's everything to play for here, and it does look good going forwards.
Yeah, okay. All right, and one last stock you mentioned worth chatting about is Bushveld Minerals. And what's the news there, John?
Well, we raised money for Bushveld last week, put a number of new institutional investors into the stock. The money is to be used to consolidate what they own of the Vametco project yet further. There's a company called Sojitz, which is a Japanese trading company that owns a 20% stake of that. So they'll look at buying that back in. That's equivalent, effectively a share buyback type arrangement. But there is a negotiation to be had there. And some money for just helping to develop or expand the production of the Vametco plant. So that was all well-founded. And I think given that the vanadium price is still flying very high at something over $70 per kilogram, I think that we're quite likely to see very, very strong cash flows from the company this year of something over $100 million for the Vametco project, of which Bushveld Minerals owns 59.1%. So really strong, I mean, unusually strong cash generation for a business that they've only recently acquired and well beyond anyone's expectations.
Yeah, and also it's pushing up new highs recently, isn't it? So it's I mean, you know, it's, if you look at this back in 2017, start of, it is pretty much 1.35 pence, you know, certainly below 2 pence. And now we're looking at 14.6 pence. It's a seven bagger right there. And like I say, it's just made new highs. The stock, when was this? Let me just move this across. Yeah, just in April, May, just end of March, it started making new highs again. It's pushing up again. So it's looking strong on the chart there, isn't it?
Yes, I think, well, the quality of the new investors who've come in says it all. They are blue chip people, and they know what they're buying.
BMN is the ticker there for Bushveld. John, thanks very much for that, fella, and we'll speak next week.
Very welcome, thank you.
All right, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are as follows. At five, Highlands Natural Resources, HNR. At three, Sirius Minerals, SXX. At four, C4X Discovery Holdings, at C4XD. At two, PhotonStar LED Group, PSL. And number one most followed company was ACP. That's Armadale Capital, by the way. I wrote a blog about those on the weekend, and still highly most followed. And I think if you look at their project, it's quite compelling and worth looking at. It's graphite, essentially, which I didn't know there's more graphite in a lithium-ion battery than lithium. So it's quite a highly sought-after commodity. Okay, time for top five most liked RNSs. They come as follows. At five, Motive Bio. That's MTFB, Holdings and Company. At four, Rehobold Resources, RBD, Total Voting Rights. At three, Frontera Resources, and that's shareholder update meeting and presentation. At two, Mayen Energy, operations update. That's MYN ticker there. And number one, most liked RNS, came from United Oil and Gas, update on Walton Morant license. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT Weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.